We just got back from the most incredible experience.
Wow, really just getting into it right there.
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Okay, hi guys. We missed you. Before we get into the episode, we do have a couple announcements.
Let's do it, yeah.
So it's been a crazy summer, and as you guys have seen on Future Swell, we've been doing a lot of cool stuff, collabing with a lot of really great people. If you run an Instagram account and are trying to get your environmental message out there, reach out to us. And we would love to collaboration post with something that's aligned. Ideally, we just have this awesome ocean conservation climate activism community, and we just want you to learn as much as you can from it, and it to just be like a little living hub of everyone's work around the world for our blue planet.
Yep, everyone get involved.
Yeah, so this is, I think it's part two of Stoked on Solutions.
Yes.
Right, so we did part one. You guys should go check it out. Part one was we looked at three solutions, ocean conservation solutions around the world, and kind of dissected them from our perspective. The idea behind the Stoked on Solutions series is to teach you how other places in the world are doing things so that we can copy it for our backyard and adapt it. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty proud to tell you guys in this episode that Stoked on Solutions isn't just going to live on sustainability in the sea. It's going to live elsewhere too.
Yeah.
Do we want to just leave it at that?
Let's leave it at that. Work in progress right now.
Yeah. So welcome back to Sustainability in the Sea. Okay, so I know that last episode we talked about three different solutions in three different areas of the world, but now we're going to be talking about solutions all in one area of the world, which we just came back from.
The San Juan Islands. And so why did
good
we go
one,
to...
Alex.
Why did we go to the San Juan Islands?
They're off the coast of Washington State. They're technically still Washington State, but they're really close to the like Canadian border, like the actual Salish Sea, which is where we were on the water in.
Yeah, for the most part.
Canadian and United States waters. So we went there for a week. How long have we been wanting to go there?
Since I met you, pretty much.
Yeah, and far longer before I met you. So we're looking at like over 7 years.
Yep.
What are the San Juan Islands?
San Juan Islands are a group of islands, and they are home to the orca populations of the U.S. So they have the southern residents, which frequent their islands.
The northern residents, the transient killer whales are found there. Mm-hmm. Basically, it's like this overlapping hotspot of many different waters that orcas are found in. But they have all these other wild, like so many different species of wildlife too. Like we saw stellar sea lions, humpbacks, harbor seals. Wait, I saw an eagle.
Eagle, yeah.
I saw an eagle flying. I know that for folks that live in that area, that's not a big deal. It was kind of a big deal for me.
Yeah.
I'm from Arizona.
Yeah, we haven't seen eagles very much, so that was exciting.
Yeah, what else did we see? Porpoises, harbor porpoises, humpbacks were in the area.
There was a minke whale sighting, but we didn't see it.
Yeah, but essentially, like, what you just need to know about this ecosystem is that it's so productive, and partially because it's cold water, but partially also because of the currents that facilitate upwelling in the area. And they have, like, such a robust food chain with orcas at the top of that food chain. So we went with my family to go try to see orcas in the wild. And, like, just to preface this, like, I'm a SeaWorld kid. You're a SeaWorld kid.
Yeah, I grew up going, not necessarily SeaWorld, but the same concepts.
I don't know if it's our age or if it's an era, but, like, this was, like, what I looked forward to. And so I've never seen orcas in the wild, ever. And it's truly, like, been a lifelong dream of mine, especially since I decided when I learned more about the industry that I never wanted to support seeing them in a captive space again. So... but I was really surprised, not just by the orca and whale watching industry in the area, but like how sustainability and conservation was like all over everything.
Yeah, the entire island that we were on, which was Friday Harbor.
Yeah, or San Juan Island, and we were in the town of Friday Harbor. They had a few different other towns, and we did go to another harbor. But there's around 6,000 people that live on the island, and we spent a handful of days whale watching and a handful of days just exploring. We also got to see my friend Megan that I was aboard the EV Nautilus with for National Geographic. You guys should go check out that episode. Last year, I went on a National Geographic expedition, and it was a collaboration with Oceanic Exploration Trust. She runs all their educational programming.
Yeah,
we just ran into her at a brewery.
Small town.
Okay, so San Juan's. I felt like so many of the small businesses donated to nonprofits. Yeah, and like Center for Whale Research, which focuses on the southern resident population of orcas, they're based out of San Juan, based out of Friday Harbor, and I felt like so many people were donating to them, but also like to regenerative garden nonprofits and community collaborative projects and things like that. It was really cool.
It's very community oriented.
Yeah, and I even saw like they have like educational signage around the island just to encourage good behavior, but I feel like the one of the best solutions was where we stayed.
Yeah, so we stayed at the Earthbox Inn, and it was very...
My aunt found it.
Yeah, good find.
Yeah, good find.
Aunt Vicky coming through.
Yeah.
But it was very sustainably minded.
So sustainably minded.
So what are some of the things they had?
So, okay, I noticed, I did a little video on this too, but mostly there was like little things, like obviously like refillable shampoo and conditioners, which is just easy. Like... So convenient, easy. They had, like, you know how you have a coffee maker in your hotel room? They had, like, compostable Keurigs.
Mm-hmm.
But they had this booklet, which was funded from a green fee. And you guys know that we've been involved in trying to pass a green fee in Hawaii for literally years now. But this wasn't, like, a statewide green fee. It was set up differently. It was, like, a tourist tax on booking. Mm-hmm. So when you booked a hotel room, not just, like, at Earthbox, it was, like, accommodations... the tax would go to a fund, and there was a grant program associated with this fund, and part of the grant project, or one of the grant projects from this fund, was this stewardship guide that was like a pamphlet that was left in our hotel room that literally had any piece of information you...
It was super helpful.
Yeah.
And it kind of told us, like, things about the island, the community as well. It told us about where the trash goes, where their water comes from, and, like, why we should be mindful of what we... use and what we like in terms of water, and then what we buy in terms of trash.
Yeah, and they also talked a lot about, like, obviously this is a whale watching community and so, like, centered around wildlife and protecting the natural world, but, like, they talked about, like, Leave No Trace and, like, this program that they have called WhaleWise, which is just, like, ways to respect wildlife and, like, ways to mitigate any harm or behavioral changes that you could cause to wildlife. And, like, it was a pretty short pamphlet, but I read it in, like, maybe, like, 20 minutes. It had, like, a segment, and it was really educational, and it answered so many questions that I think that I can imagine that when you're settling in, like, you're a visitor, and you read this, and then you're just completely equipped to be the best visitor possible, and I couldn't stop thinking about how much we need something like this in Hawaii.
I know. Like, and what was cool, too, is, like, even, like, your mom and your aunt and your cousins read it as well, and it's, like, we are very conservation-minded, so of course we're going to dive into it and see what it says. But
no, they read it all.
They were like, oh, we learned this. And I was like, you read it? Like, that's awesome.
Yeah, because it was easy, and it was cute, and it had lots of good pictures, and it was skimmable, and all the good marketing things. Anyway, that was, like, one of the best ones. And Earthbox also, like, I don't know, they just really did their part as an accommodation. And I think that not only do I recommend you staying there if you ever go, but I just recommend, like, check out that video and see if there's any hotels in your area that are doing things like that, because I think as guests and as consumers, we have a, like, responsibility and also a lot of power to just be like, this idea was done in this. Like, could we do it here? And things like that.
Yeah, it's so easy to implement some of these things, too.
Yeah, so that was definitely one of them. Okay, obviously the reason that we went. I don't even know if it's... We should just tell them what happened, because... It's more of a story.
Yeah, it is a story. And so this is also how Stokedown Solutions, our other part, is going to be. It's kind of telling our story. But we'll tell it here as well.
Oh, yeah. You're right. Okay, so, you guys, the reason that I wanted to go to the San Juan was because I want to see the southern resident killer whale. So if you don't know what those are, they're an ecotype of orcas, so not a subspecies, but could be, out for debate. And there's 75 left, and they are chronically... they're critically endangered because they're chronically undernourished from lack of their primary food source, which is Chinook salmon.
Mm-hmm. They only eat salmon. Well, primarily eat salmon.
Yeah, and Chinook makes up a large portion of their salmon diet. Mm-hmm. And so for that reason, like, my huge goal of this trip was, like, oh my God, imagine if I could see them in the wild here.
Yeah, but especially when there's only 75 left. Like, that would be crazy.
Yeah, but then I learned day one that... They're not really in the Salish Sea. They're not inland because they're out in the open ocean.
They're just looking for food.
Trying to find food that is a more reliable energy source, which makes sense as an endangered species. Mm-hmm. And I just want to shout out my friend Kendra. She creates content under Intertidal Kendi. Gave me all this incredible resources before I left and was really helpful. And so yeah, I was like, okay, we're totally not seeing southern residents, but also I'm so proud of them for diversifying their prey source so that they can,
I know, they're just trying.
Reproduce. They're trying their best. And
so we didn't see the southern residents, but how many days did we search for orcas?
Four.
We searched for 4 days. It was
so
crazy.
So we booked 2 whale watchers with my family, and we saw humpbacks, which was really cool.
We saw some humpbacks, we saw stellar sea lions, harbor seals.
Eagles.
Yeah, but we were there for orcas.
The humpbacks migrate from the south, so they have a handful of different breeding grounds, Hawaii, Maui being one of them. So we see humpbacks a lot living in Hawaii, and but it was really cool to see them like in their other part of their life cycle, which is their feeding season. Yeah, we got to see a few, and that was really cool. But 2 whale watches passed, and my family was so bummed. And then we went on a kayak, which was really incredible. I got to see a kelp forest, and it was just cool being on the water. I love being on the water without a motor.
It's different.
It's quiet. It's calming. It's, yeah. And but there's all these straits and channels that has, like, a lot of boat traffic. And so I remember learning about how underwater noise pollution can threaten whales, and it was really interesting to actually see it in practice. But they have a lot of guidelines.
Yeah.
They're trying to implement more.
And it seemed like the captains were very compliant with their guidelines, because there was like this social pressure where if you're caught doing something that you're not supposed to, it's like you will be called out for it within the community. And
yeah.
With a community of 6,000 or 7,000 people, obviously you don't want that to happen.
Yeah, and I mean, we always talk about how we have to, like, shift the social norms around conservation for it to be, like, socially enforced to do the right thing. And I see that happening in areas of small population. So we saw that in French Polynesia, too.
Mm-hmm.
They have whale watching there in October in the fall months. And I learned from a captain that, you know, it's just like you'll be like, oh, I know them. Because it's a small area. Like,
yeah.
Why are they pulling that stuff right now? Like, they shouldn't be treating a whale that way. And, yeah.
Okay, so we go out on our 4th whale watch.
Oh, yeah, my family leaves. They give up and leave.
Well, they had to leave. We had to stay a little extra day from just logistic purposes. So
Yeah.
So they all leave. They're all super bummed. And we're like, all right, we got one more day. Let's go on the water one more time. Just see what we see. And We get on the water, and they're like, all right, like, there's some orcas that are pretty close to the harbor, or there's reports of many orcas really far away, deep into Canadian waters.
Yeah, and mind you, we, like, went to the Zero Waste store, and we found Dip, which was, like, a literal previous client of ours, and we started talking to the owner, and we told her our situation. She was like, you need to go out with this company.
Because they have a fast boat.
Yeah, they have a fast boat.
Fast boat means you can get further away. It means you can search for more orcas. And we're like, oh, cool.
We're like, oh, that makes sense. Yeah. So we go out with them. We're like, Alex is not hopeful. I am a very, by nature, very hopeful person. And so I'm like, what's going to happen? And they're like, this is going to be an hour boat ride. And we're like, okay. We go deep into Canadian waters.
Yeah.
And it's also, we got the last tour because I had to work that day.
Yeah, it was the sunset tour.
So it was like, we were like, oh my gosh, like,
this is literally our last chance. We're leaving the next morning. So
yeah, and they're like, hey, we have reports, but we still have to find them.
Yeah. Wasn't a sure thing either.
Yeah, a really cool conservation solution that they do is they have this, like, open source app on the US side of it where they share whale sightings with all the other whale watching companies. So there's not really this competition mindset that me and Alex, like, often criticize, especially on sustainability in the sea.
Mm-hmm.
But they have to find them every morning. And so we learned that, like, one of the reasons why it was hard for us to find them those earlier days is because we were the first tour of the morning, and the first tours have to find it. So when we were booking this one, we're like, let's just get the last tour of the day. Like, we'll get an aggregation of all of the sightings of the entire day and hopefully find one. So we're, like, approaching. It's crazy conditions. Like,
yeah.
So glassy.
No wind, no waves, nothing.
Beautiful golden hours approaching. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you were the one who saw them in the distance because you were wearing your glasses.
Yeah, so we're motoring up, and we're, like, still a mile plus away. And I'm looking away, and I see this black dot. And then the black dot disappears. And then there's another black dot. And then that disappears as well. And I was like, I think I see them.
I was like, no.
No. And so, like, as we get closer, we just see this bigger black dot.
Yeah, it was so anticlimactic in a way that, like, think about, from my perspective, like, I've waited my entire life for this. And we're just, like, slowly getting closer to my dream. And it was... But the cool thing about our captain, which we mentioned, they're super respectful, is there weren't any U.S. boats there. It was just some Canadian whale-watching mm-hmm. boats.
But there were, like, four or five boats total.
Yeah, and they were all giving them a lot of space. But what our captain did is he stayed really far from the orcas and just moved. They were also communicating with us exactly what the guidelines were. So they were like, we are going to stay over a mile away. We're going to loop around this way.
Mm-hmm. We're going to go under a certain amount of knots so we don't make too much noise.
Yeah, this is the threshold that the studies show that noise becomes a problem. And it's like, what? This is... It was really cool to see that. And we get there and we see them. And it's just this... Obviously, the first thing we see is this huge male dorsal fin that's like 8 feet and like not toppled over because they live in the wild, and it's like was insane.
His name was Thor, we learned.
Yeah, his name was Thor, and his mom was almost taken for captivity. Remember? Oh, they told us that story.
Yeah.
We'll come back to that if there's time.
Yeah, we'll come back.
And there are all these whales, and they're in separate groups, and the naturalists, I don't know if this is my favorite part. The naturalists start like chirping amongst themselves, which, like, you know, they're, if you for those of you that don't know, photo ID is how whale naturalists and whale scientists identify a whale down to the individual. So humpbacks mm-hmm. have like unique undermarkings on the underside of their fluke. For cetaceans or for odontocetes like orcas, it's their dorsal fin and their patch, for orcas, their saddle patch. And so they're getting all these really good photos of them so that they can identify them down to the individual, because when it comes to these populations, the naturalists know who everyone is by name, by mother, by family, where they've been, where they're being sighted. And now, because of the whale watching industry and the open source app, also training or also tracking of yeah. where they go.
It was so cool. Yeah, our naturalist was like, oh, there's Thor. There's Rocky number two. There's so-and-so. And just like, I was like, I barely saw them. You see them pop up. They go down. It was beautiful. And she just knew. She knew all about them. She knew the lineage. She knew who the mother was.
Oh, God. It just goes back to kind of what we talk about a lot with fishing and marine protected areas, that like the people who live on the water and mm-hmm. live on the water know far more than people who might be behind in a lab.
Study it behind a screen. And then sorry to switch topics slightly, but just to mention that too, is the fishing community also has access to that app that you were mentioning. So a lot of the times they're the ones who are reporting it, because they don't want their fish being taken off their line by the orcas. They don't want to be harassed by the orcas. So if they see orcas, they'll call it in or input it in the app, and then they'll go somewhere else. That's what one of the naturalists was telling me.
That's awesome.
So it's like, well, it works for each other. Yeah. They help each other out.
It's like everyone wins with this model. It's like helping each other out. The whale industry thrives. The fishing industry thrives. The whales are being respected because it's socially enforced. And like tourists are getting life-changing experiences, which are definitely conservation entry points mm-hmm. to care more about the ocean. Okay, so back to the story.
Yeah, so, sorry.
So they are... I know they were educating us before, but as soon as they were close enough to start getting IDs, they just like went into crazy robotic mode where they started identifying everybody, and they were just like...
They were so excited.
Oh, they were so excited. It was contagious. It was like, they're like, this is this family, this is... And they're called matrilineal lines, the mother line in orcas, and they were like, oh my God, there's could be three lines. Oh, there could be four. Oh, there's this individual's here, the baby's here. Oh yeah, there were babies.
Okay, and so when they have... These are transient orcas or big orcas, and when they have these
transient killer whales predate marine mammals. We mentioned mm-hmm. that the resident killer whales predate fish or salmon. So while we were approaching them, the naturalists, and mind you guys, I've just been obsessed with southern residents. Like, I was maybe sleeping a little bit on how cool Biggs killer whales are. The naturalists are telling us that their social cohesion and their social behavior is so complex and charismatic. Mm-hmm. And what were you gonna say?
I was just gonna say that because they had all these different family lineages or family lines, when they all get together, they're called a tea party.
Yeah.
A transient party, I would assume.
Yes. Yeah, like it's like a little tea. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so they compared it to a family reunion because these are long-lived species. They have deep social bonds and connections to one another. And he was like, I remember the naturalist going like, it's like they're hanging out with their favorite cousin right now. Like,
mm-hmm. So we saw them like racing each other. And at some point they are all just like zoomed away and not necessarily to get away from us just because they wanted to swim. They were
porpoising
out of the water.
Oh, I just posted that video.
I don't know what reason, but it was cool. And yeah. It's like they were hugging. They were like, they would do this thing where they would like rub up against each other and do like roll. Little spins.
Yeah, the naturalist said that that was what they were hugging.
Yeah.
And it's like a reunion. And they were like, imagine, I remember them saying like, oh yeah, like no one's with their mom right now. Like they're all jumbled and mixed in because they're seeing their friends.
Yeah, they're just hanging out.
Yeah. And so then I remember, it was beautiful, right? And yeah. I remember him going, why are they going so fast? Like they're going like 15 knots. What's going on? And the other guy
goes, which means they're on a mission.
Yeah. He goes, they have an agenda.
Uh-huh.
And they're going straight for the shore. And they end up, and like the bigger ones were closer. And it was so crazy to watch. So the other thing I noticed is they don't care about us.
No.
And mind you, I mean, we were following guidelines, we were far away, all those things. But they really did not care about us.
No, they're just doing their thing.
And the naturalist told me it's because they're literally a thriving ecotype. Like,
an apex predator.
Yeah.
They have nothing to worry about. Like,
yeah, there's around 400 to 500 of them total in the population of big killer whales. It's like an estimate. And 150 of them are under 10 years old. So their population is booming right now. And they said that that was because of the rebound of their prey species,
mm-hmm.
right? Because seals and sea lions were being harvested for what? The fur trade,
mm-hmm.
for their pelts. And now that they've had a chance to rebound since that has stopped, now we're seeing it in the next level, the next trophic level, the apex predators population is rebounding. So it was
Which is so hopeful. Like, that's an awesome hope story that we're going to cover at some other point in time.
Yeah, like, it's like, we see the southern residents dwindling, right? And then we see this other population flourishing, and it's like, animals just adapt and are a response to the health of their ecosystem, mm-hmm, right?
Totally.
And it's just, it was so crazy to see. And so, okay, so they go to the shore, and they're just kind of gliding. They were cruising at this point. They were not going fast. They were gliding along the shore and, like, just in really, I guess he said it was deep water, but it was really close. And mm-hmm. they were just kind of, like, cruising all together, spaced out, golden hour. And I think we were, like, I remember our captain, he was like, we are so late. Like, we are going to we are so far away.
We have an hour plus trek back to our harbor.
Yeah, we shouldn't stay. And we're like, oh my God, what's happening? And then
so we see these orcas start heading towards this little rock in the middle of the sea. And we were like, oh, what are they doing over there? And then so our captain was like, all right, let's go check them out by this rock. And then we'll probably have to head back because we got to go. And
we had binoculars.
Yeah.
And I looked in the binoculars and there's like all these stellar sea lions on... They're not in this rock. They're actually in really shallow water by the rock.
Just hanging out with the rock. And so what do you do during family reunions? You eat.
You eat. Yeah, that's what he said. That's what the naturalist said. I was like, oh my God. And we literally watched them beeline for it. I remember the naturalist saying National Geographic would pay so much money to be here. Or and like someone else was like, this is the entire event of the season. Another person's like, I've seen orcas predate a seal before, but I've never seen them at this scale. Like,
yeah, never seeing 20 orcas predate multiple seals.
Yeah, they said by this point they knew who everybody was. They knew that there were over 4 groups, possibly 5, at least 18 whales, potentially over 20, and that they were all coming together and eating, and there were babies, and we watched for the next, God, how long were we there? Like an hour?
Yeah, probably another hour.
An hour we watched them hunt and predate how many?
Probably 4 or 5 stellar sea lions. And stellar sea lions are huge.
Like 1,500 pounds.
Yeah. I think one of the bigger seal species.
Yeah. And they were in like 5 feet of water is mm-hmm. what we learned. And so the orcas, we were like, they're having like, you know, they're not able to get them. Why not? And it's like they were having to do all these different maneuvers. At one point, so when the seals or sea lions come together and create this like big blob, kind of like a school of fish, it's called rafting, mm-hmm. and they were rafting up, they were also screaming.
Yeah, I felt so bad for them because seals and sea lions are some of my favorite species.
Yeah, Alex is a seal boy.
I love pinnipeds. And just seeing them squeal for their lives, it was so sad.
It was so sad. And it was also like, they didn't, there was a huge, I don't know, it was just also,
they didn't know what to do. They were just like, save yourselves. So they were hanging out in this little shallow, we'll call it like reef of water. So they were hanging out in the shallow area. And what we'd see is these orcas, maybe two or three, like, would group together and then swim by. And the naturalist told us that what they were doing was they were, because the orcas are so big, they're able to displace the water, meaning push the water. So the seals kind of go out into the deeper area, which then allows another orca potentially able to swim up and get them, which was just crazy, them like seeing them work together.
Yeah, and all the different ecotypes of orcas around the world have different hunting strategies that sometimes get famous and covered. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, we've seen some that, you know, beach themselves, yeah, or like whatever. Yeah, like in Patagonia. Yeah, or like, but this was theirs. And yeah. It was obscene.
It was, yeah.
We looked at the footage later and we realized we got footage of an orca grabbing a sea lion.
So stay tuned for that.
Yeah, stay tuned for that. You can look at it on Future Swell. So we also saw like a smaller group of sea lions, like six or so, like a little bit further out. And they were,
I think there were way more than six, but because we were so far away, it looked
the same.
Yeah, but I think it was like 15 plus.
Okay. I was like, why didn't they join up with the bigger group? But
I think it's because they were on a shallow reef, and then there was a little deeper area in between them and the bigger group. And so if they were to swim for it, that just puts them at even more risk.
Yeah.
Which is just, oh my goodness.
Yeah, and we proceeded to watch this for like an hour. I think they were still hunting when we left.
Yeah, we just had to go.
We had to leave. There was this larger whale watching tour boat from Canada, and it was clearly like a bigger one, and you said you saw people like not even paying attention and being bored inside. And
yeah.
I just want to say, like, if you aren't going to bring this energy into whale watching boats, like, leave space for other people, because like that was an insane, crazy experience that was so rare and atypical, and like, you know that from the naturalist freaking out, and it's like, that I can't believe they were inside not even paying attention.
I know, I agree.
Yeah. Okay, what was your favorite part? I feel like seeing the naturalists work together, as far from a conservation lens, okay, mm-hmm. from a conservation lens, seeing how we were told the transient orca subpopulation was thriving, and then we got to watch them thrive,
mm-hmm.
in a family reunion, in hunting abundant prey, in taking only what they need, in like all of, in not caring about the whale watching boats, in porpoising, in expending so much energy. And it was just like, oh my god, like they're good. They're solid. And then seeing the naturalists team up to not only help promote citizen science and build their photography pages that inspire people to care about orcas, but also just sheer joy and excitement of, mm-hmm. understanding the life of these individuals, like that.
Yeah,
that,
you can tell they really enjoyed their jobs.
Yeah, and that woman who clearly had been following them for so long and like was just calling out them out by name, mm-hmm. I was like, you are like what it's all about.
Yeah,
like
and those are the type of people that inspire others. Like, they surely inspired us, and we're pretty passionate about the ocean.
Yeah. Whew. Yeah, and it was like, you know, we went and learned more about their work. They're like, they have podcasts. They have, like, it's, mm-hmm. just like they're creating communities around caring for whales. And what does caring for whales do? It's a conservation entry point that allows you to care about the broader ocean and the broader threats to the ocean and ecosystem. And I just feel like, yes, we're a product of the Save the Whales movement. Yes, whale watching industry is thriving. But also, like, it's such an opportunity for them to talk about larger ocean climate challenges, mm-hmm. and I don't know, I feel like that was the biggest solution, was like community-based investment in a species.
Yeah, totally agree.
And I thought that was only going to be the southern residents, but they have community-based investment on all of them.
Yeah, really just the ocean in general. And yeah, like, yeah, it doesn't stop at orcas, it's humpbacks, it's the minkies, it's even like, yeah, the seals and the bald eagles, and a lot of them know exactly where the eagle nests are. And it's like,
and remember we learned like oh, that eagle nest has been going, been being built for 10 generations.
I'm like, yeah.
How do you know that?
Exactly. Just so cool.
Yeah, what was your favorite part?
My favorite part was just seeing the orcas in general. It's something that we've waited a long time for, and
it's definitely worth the wait.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think when you think about, like, how... You can obviously hear how stoked we are on this, but also just, like, I think about the endangered Hawaiian monk seal population here and mm-hmm. how, like, on Oahu specifically, like, students get to name the... provide names, Hawaiian names to the seal pups, and, like, that sheer act connects those students so much to the seals, and, like, that just naming the orcas in general, it's like, that's Thor, that's whatever, mm-hmm. that's T-36 or whatever, and it's, like, you have a connection to the animal in that way, and I think that is a solution in itself.
Oh, totally agree. And just a connection to the ecosystem as a whole.
Yeah, so we shared with you the story, but we're also producing the story in visual form for you to see as one of our Stoked on Solutions series, and I just can't wait for you guys to see all of that. The footage has started being rolled out this week, so check it out. Follow us on Future Swell and Carissa and Climate, and mm-hmm. I want to hear, like, what is an amazing whale watching story you had? Like, I waited almost 30 years to be able to for this, and it was like, I'm just so grateful that we did it.
Yeah,
because
100% agree,
it was amazing.
Yeah, share your stories, share this podcast. We love you.